Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. We have a very special show podcast in store for you today. We have Mr. Ben Claybaugh out of our Pensacola, Orlando office joining us. Ben is an accomplished environmental professional. He has 30 plus years of experience in the fields, worked with lots of different medias, lots of different things. But today we're going to talk about some innovative techniques used for brownfield remediation. Ben, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, Todd. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. And what a great topic and what a great conversation. But before we get into it, get started, as we record this, it's a once in a century occurrence. I think you're telling me that Pensacola's got, 7-8 inches of snow.
Yeah, that's right. We, it snowed on Tuesday. It started in the, sort of like midday and was coming down hard. I grew up in Kansas, so I've seen it before, but I've been here 40 years, so it's different, and it's something that the community is not really equipped to handle. So, bridges shut down. I-10 was shut down. I think I-10 is still shut down from Mobile to Tallahassee. And this is, on day three. So it's a big deal.
So it sounds like a topic for our next podcast. So stay tuned, faithful listeners. All right, Ben. Well, man, let's get into it. Let's talk about brownfields. So let's just start with some basics. Let's talk about brownfield remediation and why it's so critical for communities and our environment.
Well, okay, brownfields is a kind of a name of a field or a programs that both federal and state to address kind of the legacy of environmental issues over the decades. There on cities and towns across the country, there are properties that are abandoned or underutilized or are sitting fallow because of contamination from past uses. And it doesn't even have to be actual contamination. It can be, the perception that, oh, here's that, that old abandoned building over there. Everyone knows it's contaminated, which what that does is those buildings just sit there. They're a hazard to the community. They're not doing anything for the tax rolls for the government. And brownfields are a way to encourage developers to come in and revitalize and reuse those properties. And brownfield remediation is just the process of cleaning up these properties. And it's, a community-based thing. It's bringing those properties back into use for the community, by the community, and putting tax rolls, putting the taxes back on the tax rolls to make this, and it's really a win-win for everybody. It's a good program.
Yeah, no question. And, just because you identify a site and an opportunity to bring into the program, there's still a lot of work to be done. And as you point out, we're going to talk about today, there's lots of techniques, but you really kind of drilled in on five techniques, very innovative to address, brownfields. They're starting to kind of give us, quicker lifts and better uptime and kind of change the game remediation. So, maybe we can start or go to the next level, which is just kind of lay out what those innovative techniques are.
Sure. I kind of identified some techniques that were outside the norm of what we usually look at. If we're on a large industrial site or on an oil terminal or something, we've got, there are some certain freedoms. I don't want to call them freedoms, I guess, but it's certain flexibility in what we can do and where we can do it. But brownfield sites are in urban areas. They're usually in residential areas. The city or the town or the county, they've got limited budgets. The footprint that we have to work with, it's constrained, and there's a lot of people around. So we have to kind of think differently about it. And so these techniques I kind of highlighted sort of address those issues. The first one is one that it's been around a while, but not a lot of, hasn't got a lot of attention. It's called mycoremediation. Now, the myco part is mycology or mushrooms. It's a little bit unusual. It's not actually the mushrooms itself, but it's the mycelium, which like the roots of the mushroom. If you think of like an apple tree, the mushroom is like the apple. And then the mycelium is the tree and the roots. And it's under our feet, miles and miles per square foot, everywhere we go, mycelium. And it's a very powerful, complex organism that uses some pretty sophisticated enzymatic processes to break down lots of different materials. So it can be a really powerful technique under the right circumstances. Then there's advanced in situ or in situ, however you want to say it, chemical oxidation. ISCO is for short, and ISCO has been around for a long time. You mix up some chemicals, you shoot them into the ground, it reacts with the contaminants, and that's how that works. Advanced ISCO, though, is injecting custom oxidants that are sort of custom made through some pretty detailed and sophisticated injection type equipment that allows for more precise targeting and speeding up cleanup and reducing costs that way. A third technique, phytoremediation. Phyto means plants. And of course, that's been around since before humans were, but phytoremediation 2.0. So phytoremediation 1.0 is, you know, you've got a detention pond from some industrial process and you plant some plants and it kind of sequester iron from the water so it doesn't get downstream or whatever. That's the normal, usual kind of way. Phyto, the 2.0, though, refers to researchers and engineers are coming up with genetically enhanced plants that can more efficiently absorb a wider range of contaminants, including things like heavy metals, which was not something that could be handled before. Then there is nanotechnology or nanoparticles. And, of course, nano, 1,000 times smaller than micro. And as particles, the reason why nanotechnology or nanoparticles are so powerful is because the smaller you get in size of these particles, the greater the ratio of your surface area to volume. And why that's important is surface area means activity. So these nanoparticles are very much more reactive with whatever type of particle they are, whatever the chemical is, making the particles that much smaller makes them more reactive. It reacts faster and more completely, and you can get into areas that you can't get with normal size particles. Like, you can't just have an ISCO chemical and inject it into a clay. It just won't get in there. There's not enough room between the clay particles. But with nano particles, you can get in there. You can treat clay. You can go down deep. You can get into rock. So it's a lot more flexible and a lot faster. And I included as a fifth one, artificial intelligence and machine learning. And that's not because they're necessarily remediation methods in them themselves, but they enhance everything we do. And they're going to be more enhancing, I guess. They're going to change everything we do, really. But with AI and machine learning, we can get better, more precise, more detailed assessments. We can better design and more precisely design our remediation strategies. We can predict contaminant behavior. We can optimize our cleanups. So it's just a way to make things much more precise and efficient for the cleanup.
No, I think that's well thought of too, because you can just kind of bring the power of knowledge and you've got a ton of knowledge, but then you get the AI based piece and the whole world of knowledge and bring all those resources to bear. That is a game changer. So of those five techniques, and those are all just, you know, very smart. There's applications, custom fit, depending on the site and what's going on for each one of them. Which one do you think has got the most potential to really be a game changer of the five? And why?
Well, of the actual techniques of the first four, because like I said, AI and machine learning is going to change everything. It is going to be the game changer. But as far as these actual remediation techniques, I'd have to say nanotechnology in soil and groundwater. And it's just because you can do so many more things and it's so much more customizable, and being able to get into areas you couldn't get to before with any other kind of technology, that's just in and of itself, it's a game changer. But the actual application, the higher reactivity makes it also something, you know, one of the things, just kind of comparing, if you take regular ISCO or chemical oxidation injection, you take a material, you're going to inject it in to react with another material. One of the things you got to consider is, what's that reaction going to turn into, right? It's just, you hope that it's all just going to be CO2 and water, but a lot of times you get some reaction products that are, they could end up being worse than the original contaminant, but with the nanotechnology, because of the scale of the way they operate, it's a complete breakdown. And it does it faster. Like I said, you can get into clays, which were pretty much, if you had stuff stuck in a clay before, you know, there weren't a whole lot of options. So it's the way it rapidly reacts. It's thoroughness. It's the molecular breakdown all the way down, reducing that residual pollution risk. And then its applicability across just a wide range of sites, hard to reach areas underneath buildings, down deep where it's difficult to get anything else going on. And all of this with just the minimal on-site disruption. You know, you're there to inject it and then you leave. And whatever else needs to happen on the site can happen on the site. And then also it's got behind it this whole field. It's is research momentum. It's such a powerful tool that there's a lot of research going into it. So there's going to be continuous advancements in both the material science and the nanotechnology. It's going to keep improving. So it's going to become even more efficient. And, you know, that's like the number one. But I'd say close behind it are the other three, just because, you know, the mycoremediation, phytoremediation, their cost is so low and they're just so simple. You plant some plants and then that's it. It doesn't get much easier than that. But really, I think the nanotechnologies is the big one.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And, you know, briefly touch on traditional approaches, you know, digging hole, bringing in ozone, bringing in big vacuum systems, in situ, you know, soil and groundwater vapor extraction systems. They make big impact. How would you compare the efficiency and cost to some of these innovative techniques that you're, you know, teaching us about?
That's a good question. And so much of it has to do with, and here's where we can bring in that fifth one, the AI and the machine learning, because, you know, what we used to do is design a process that one of my college professors used to refer to as brute force and awkwardness. You know, we would have to oversize some system of equipment and put in pipes in the ground and drill holes in the ground and make sure that we sucked up every drop of groundwater within a 3-block radius just to get the one bit of contamination that we knew was somewhere in this area, right? And then we had to treat it all and then discharge it. And or if you're going to do a dig out some contamination, you're always going to end up digging up some clean soil and sending that to a landfill, which is really wasteful in terms of transportation costs, landfill space. So what we used to do was pretty inefficient, took a lot of power, had a lot of emissions. And just over time, the development of these new techniques are partly in response to recognition that there are better ways. And now using the AI techniques and tools for improving our assessment, analyzing large data sets, predicting contaminant behavior, then optimizing remedial designs, honing in on exactly where the contamination is, how much of it is there, what needs to be done about it. So just right there, that process is versus traditional stuff just makes everything so much more cost effective and ready to go. Now, as far as the comparing the methods themselves, traditional methods, you know, oftentimes they're a lot slower. You had some off-site treatment issues. If you're going to be digging and sending stuff off to top to a landfill, they were less precise. And then there were a lot of limitations, like with the constraints on the property and what could be done with it. And sometimes they were slow. Well, these innovative techniques are a lot faster, and they're more precise, and they can be a lot more effective. Cost-wise, the traditional methods, you know, everyone knows what it costs to install a dual phase system. Everybody knows what it costs to dig 500 tons of soil and send it to a landfill. So there are some familiarities there. Everybody knows what the equipment should cost. And so there are some efficiencies due to inertia and things like developing the specialized equipment or materials, like, you know, you have to manufacture these nanoparticles. And unfamiliarity can mean that the initial cost of some of these techniques, these new techniques, are a little bit higher. But long-term costs are a lot less because they work faster. There's less site disruption. There's less waste. There's less emissions. So, and that goes to the environmental impact. It reduces the emissions. That's much more sustainable for these in situ and other kinds of methods, as opposed to the putting in a system and digging up a bunch of soil. So really, the innovative techniques, long-term, they might have a higher cost up front, but they're kind of long-term more cost efficient. They're more efficient time-wise. They work, you know, they're faster and more effective. And they have less of a disruption on the site, and they're more sustainable and eco-friendly.
Yeah, this has been just a fantastic conversation. I've got one last question for you. So I'm a listener. I'm a community. I'm a municipality. I'm an interested party. I'm out there, and I've read the article. I'm listening to us talk today on the podcast. I'd like to know more about this. How do I kind of line up my community with making sure that some of these innovative techniques you're talking about are baked into the process and I can take advantage of them?
Well, it's important to know what you're working with and what your situation is. So, you need to understand about the site and the location, to do that, to get an assessment, you need to partner with an experienced environmental consulting firm first to kind of figure out what you got to work with. And then always need to, before you start anything, it's good to know where you want to get to. So what's the end goal? What's the future use of this property or this area, or what kind of impact do you want it to make, so that you know where you want to go? Then you can tailor how you get there. And then when you're talking with and reviewing different types of partners to work with and environmental consultants, ask them, you know, have you guys heard about this? A nanotechnology or micro remediation, or what do you think about it? What's your plan for evaluating whether or not this will work on our city or our county? And what's really important, this never be underemphasized, is to work with regulators early. Regulators, just like everybody else, sometimes when they don't understand something or looking at something they're not familiar with, don't remember who said it, the confused mind says no. So the last thing you want to do is do all this work with these consultants and get all excited about nanotechnology and then present your plan to the state and have them say, oh, that's not approved. So getting engaged with regulators early, letting them know kind of what you want to do and which way you're going to go and what you're interested in, helps bring them along with the process.
That's well said, Ben.
And then, of course, you've got to pay for it somehow. So, yeah. And you got to pay for it. So budgets for cities and counties and states, generally, they're tight and have priorities in there already. So explore grant opportunities and other incentives that are out there. There are plenty of grants. EPA has grants for cleanup. The states have brownfield cleanup grants. There are CDBG funds and other types of grant programs. And then there are incentives, tax incentives, that you can work with, and you can partner with developers and private companies that can take advantage of these tax incentives. If you partner together to do incentivize doing a redevelopment, which would include a remediation as part of that redevelopment, and take advantage of the tax incentives that go along with that. Also critical is to engage the stakeholders, involve local residents and businesses early. Same thing with the confused mind. The word gets out that you're going to be planting genetically modified plants. That could be a problem if there isn't the proper introduction and education through that process. Same thing with, no doubt. You know, oh, we're using mushrooms to clean up this dirt. Come on. You know, yeah. So engaging the local residents in early workshops and keeping everyone informed is really important. And just when you're starting with something new, it's good to start small. Begin with a small scale application or a little test pilot project, a little corner over here, or a small site over here where you can try something else. You know, and the best defense is success too. So once you get a small test project or a pilot project and you can look at it and then take those results. Okay. Look how this worked over here. Now we're going to scale it up and use it over here. And then again, just keeping in mind throughout this whole process, what the end goal is versus how you're going to get there. You know, it's going to be a different process if you're looking at redeveloping a site for a senior center or a child daycare center or a parking lot. Those are two completely different paths to get there. So that's really important too, as far as the strategy and what needs to happen to get to whatever your goal happens to be.
Well, Ben, well done, man. I mean, we covered a lot of territory. You laid it out well. This is exciting, and I hope our listeners, I know they enjoyed this podcast. Of course, if you'd like to talk about the topic more, you want to reach out to Ben or myself, fastest way to do that is go to our website, ppmco.com, ppmco.com. About us, you'll find our contact information and email addresses there. We'd love to talk to you more about it. Ben, I cannot express my gratitude enough. Well done, man. Any last thoughts before we wrap up our podcast?
No, I really enjoyed it. I like talking about this stuff, and I really like looking, and I really look forward to getting a chance to learn more about these techniques and to make more use of them. I think they're gonna change how we do business and help us to further engage with the community and to just really improve the lives of everyone around.
Well said, my friend. What a treat to be with you today. To our audience, thanks for tuning in. Look forward to seeing you or listening, hearing us on our next podcast. This is Todd Perry signing off, and this is PPM Simplifies. Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.